Good morning, everybody. I'd like to go ahead and call the Senate Finance Committee to order. Time is 12 minutes after 9 a.m., March 26, 2012. I'm joined today by my co-chair, Senator Hoffman, Senator Olson, Senator Egan, myself, Stedman, and we'll be joined by our colleagues, hopefully shortly. Senator Thomas is at another conflicting committee presenting a bill. Today, we're going to continue our work on Senate Bill 192, Oil and Gas Production Tax. We have two presentations today. First, the Department of Revenue will give a presentation on access to information. And then we're going to go to the Department of Natural Resources. We'll present information regarding North Slope facility constraints and lease requirements. And if we don't get through the presentations, we're going to finish them up tomorrow, because this afternoon we're booked solid. So we'll just kind of play it by ear. And I know we're starting about 15 minutes late, so there's no issue if we run over into tomorrow. So with that, I'd like to go ahead and ask the Commissioner of Revenue, Commissioner Butcher, to come forward, please. He's brought in some of his trusty aides to, in the event that he needs a lifeline, which is normal in this complicated subject matter. And with that, if you can go ahead and introduce yourself for the record, who you represent, and then walk us through this presentation, and we'll do the same format, one slide at a time, and as we work through it, because of the number of slides and the complexity of the subject matter.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Brian Butcher, Commissioner of the Department of Revenue. With me, I have one of our three audit masters, Donna Keppers, who will be walking you through the details, most of the details of the presentation. And kind of the genesis of what we have been working on in this presentation came last year as we began talking about oil taxes. And a lot of the more detailed information that the department statutorily would have been able to receive in a form that would make it more beneficial, not just for the department, but for policymakers such as the legislature and the governor, to take a look at and evaluate, we weren't currently getting. I don't blame the Department of Revenue for that. In the change from a gross tax to a net tax in 2006, as well as the changes made to ACES in 2007, the focus of the department was on getting what was almost 100 regulations worked through and into place so the tax could be administered, and that was the priority of the department. Now that we've moved beyond that, we have an opportunity to dig a little deeper in getting information in a format in which we can all better evaluate what's going on the North Slope. Looking at the information that we've been compiling, it's kind of split off into two different categories. One is we've tried to put together a five-year look back of what's happened on the North Slope over the last 5 years. We've been more restricted in being able to get information in that because we're dealing with years that companies have given the information to the department in the particular categories and subcategories that they have always done it, and it's not so easy to go after the fact and try to break it down into the kind of detail we would like. We're much more optimistic about the second piece of it, which is moving forward, putting the information we receive in categories that are easily understandable and of more value to policymakers as well as the department. And we've had a handful of meetings and workshops with the companies that are currently working in Alaska to work together to try to make it as seamless as possible moving forward in gathering that information. 2012, we believe, will be the first year going forward we'll actually have the more detailed information, so it'll probably be the true-up of calendar year 12 in March of 2013 that we'll get the breakdown that we're working towards. So that's not something that's immediate, but it's something that's in the very near future. In working it to try to fill the data gaps that the state has had, we've had a very good working relationship with the Department of Natural Resources as well as the Alaska Oil and Gas Conservation Commission, because as we're looking at the data that would be a benefit to the state, it touches on all three agencies, not just the Department of Revenue. However, we have been the agency that has been compiling that information. That this is also very timely in that we are just getting going and putting in a new tax revenue management system. And this is going to allow us to integrate these more detailed categories from the start and not have to go back into a database system and try to, after the fact, change that. So it seems to be moving in a very timely direction to the direction the department was already going. With that being said, I'd like to turn it over to Ms. Keppers to walk you through the presentation.
Thank you, Commissioner. For the record, my name is Donna Keppers, Audit Master for the Department of Revenue Tax Division. As we begin on slide number two, we've kind of given you an index of what's in the presentation. Much of these things the Commissioner has touched on. We think that this project has been quite valuable to the department. We've done quite a bit over the last year, and we recognize that there are levels of information that are necessary for decision making. And so over the last year, we've launched this project specifically to be able to capture the information that's necessary at the appropriate level in a standardized format. And standardizing information in order to collect it, in order to report it back and analyze it, is one of the first and major steps necessary in order to be successful in setting up a revenue management system or any other information management system. So what we've done over the last year is, as the Commissioner stated, we've hosted workshops. We've gathered quite a bit of data. One of the major things that we did at the beginning was we completed the industry information catalog, which is one of your handouts. It's the legal size document that has the different colors on that. That started last session, where we needed to understand from the department level what we receive in information and under what statutory authority. We needed to get our arms around what was being submitted to the department and to DNR and AOGCC, and where information was overlapping or duplicated. So we started with that document that was a result of last session. It was begun maybe in this committee, I believe, and we took that and expounded on that. And through that process, we were able to determine what we have the authority to request and at what level and how it's used and how we receive it. So that big matrix, that catalog, is a very important piece of information because it allowed us to see the forms in which we're getting information and where we're asking industry to provide duplicated information to us as well as our sister agencies. And we do have a responsibility to automate those things, streamline those things, and kind of clean those up, not only for our benefit, but for the industry as well, to be able to supply what we need to us and then ultimately to you for decision making. So that was a valuable exercise. As part of that, we stood back and we said, well, we need to look at what we've got, what we are not asking for, what we have the authority to ask for, what does the statute currently say that we can provide to you as public information, and are we doing that? And if not, why not, and how do we do that in an expeditious manner? And so what we did was we got a handful of us together and we created five huge teams of people. And we met with DNR people, with our counterparts at AOGCC, and we said, you know, we need to look at this. We are one government. We share a lot of the same information. We have different missions as revenue and as natural resources. However, we share the same baseline of information, so we should be consistent and try and help streamline this, not only to share it among ourselves, but to be able to consolidate it, to analyze it, and report it back. So we used a collaborative approach to go about doing that. We focused in five major areas. Key sources of oil and gas, tax-related information, and reporting activities are in these areas here for not only what we receive on a monthly basis from the industry, not only what they supply to us through credit applications, what they provide to our economics research group for forecasting purposes, all of this information is related. And so we focused in these five areas. We created small teams of people that do this part of the work. And we looked at how do we get it, what does it look like, and how do we make it more efficient, and what are we missing?
And you, just as we walk through this presentation, because it's pretty high level, we do have a section of the bill that, you know, is fairly lengthy dealing with information. So we're kind of trying to tie the concepts you guys are working with the desire for information that's, you know, surfaced in the previous committee and at this committee. So at some point we'll need to tie this together to help us with the bill in and of itself.
Yes, Senator.
Yeah, we'll touch on that later in the presentation, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, that's fine. Senator Hoffman.
And the other thing that I don't see here in your 5 points is audited information and time frame to get us caught up on that information. And I wonder, sometime during your presentation, can you address that issue?
Yes, sir. We began with the end in mind. We looked at, you know, what statutory authority for disclosure of information is already written into the law, and are we doing that? And we started with the end and kind of backed up to what do we have and what should we be providing and how do we go about doing that. So we embarked on the cost information gathering process, and we created a huge work plan on how to go about doing this, and we worked closely with industry because we realized that the lion's share of information we do receive, but it was in various formats. We need CapEx and OpEx detail information. We need information that's in a form to where we can collect it. We do collect that information, but it's in various forms. It's in spreadsheet form. It's in PDF form. It wasn't standardized enough for us to compile volumes and volumes of data. And so this exercise standardizes that, and it also defines what we're asking for in addition to providing the format in which to provide it. As the commissioner stated, we recognized that we needed to do a data capture of the last 5 years. We needed to see where money was being spent. We needed to understand, you know, how all of that tied together, because it is related. We needed to understand what is it that we're doing in-house, as the senator commented, as far as auditing information, as far as what we are giving back to you on an annual basis through economic research and analysis. It's all related. But what we see that was happening is we're receiving the information being used by different departments within revenue at different times. And we needed to be able to gather that information up front for different uses by different groups, by the audit group, by the economic research group, you know, and others that need information for you, for us to aggregate and supply back to you what these costs would be. But we've not been able to do that. The audits, you know, we always hear that they are behind, and And just to clarify that point, we do have a six-year statute of limitation in which to complete those audits. They are huge. They are complex. And the Department of Revenue Tax Division is not behind, if you think about it in terms of they're working within those confines of what they're allowed to operate in, which is the six-year time period. So, you know, however, from when you think about it from an industry standpoint, it's a different thought process. We come from, you know, you're working on an audit that was from the past year in a current year. And so when you think about it in terms of within, you're looking at audited information within a year or 2 years of the end of the year, in that respect, it does appear to be as if we were behind. And it is difficult to audit. And as you know, the complexities of the tax law changes from year to year. But this project looks at what information did we need in order to facilitate the audit process for our own people. So this has been needed for quite a bit of time now. And we believe that by automating and standardizing the information, collecting it timely, having it in a form to where our audit folks can actually have compiled data to benchmark and do analysis against, you know, at the time of audit, we'll expedite that process. It'll expedite many processes, in fact, within the tax division. To date, we've done quite a few accomplishments as far as forms and processes. We have prescribed what is necessary according to statute. We have worked with industry to standardize that and have communication among ourselves as to what that needs to look like. We've made some changes that are effective for this tax reporting year that we'll receive here, what, in about a week or later this week, as a matter of fact, which is the annual cost supplemental information. And what that is it's basically having the information in the look-back categories. For example, they have filed for 2011 their returns, their expenditures. Well, we need those categorized in the five high-level category areas in order to add those to the look-back. We realize that's not at a detailed level, and we would all like it to be, but we just couldn't do that in the time frame that we had because we are working with industry. They all have different accounting systems, so we're looking for what categories are in common to them all, and that's how we came up with the five. Those were common to all. And in order to get them to work with us to gather 5 years' worth, in order to reconcile numbers, that's what we could do at this time. So for this reporting year, 2011, you know, they're going to report also in a summary, in addition to their normal reporting, the five categories of costs. The other huge accomplishment for the department has been the near completion of the annual production tax return. You all know the complexity of tax regulation. Well, compiling a return that calculates and does that has been a monumental task. The annual production return has been in progress now for probably 2 years. And, it went from being a 100-plus page return to, I believe, down to maybe 70 to 80 pages. That's a complex return. And so for us to be near completion of that is a huge accomplishment. And what will happen is that huge return is near completion, and what our audit group is going to do is they're going to use the annual production tax return in its current form, and they're going to do the testing. Basically, they're going to use that for to run calculations with the oil and gas returns that we're going to receive here later this week. they're going to take that information and they're going to run that through this annual production tax return in order to test that return. The next slide on slide 9 gives you the five high-level categories for the look-back. And we had excellent compliance and reporting from the companies to get this information. And as I said before, these are the high-level categories that we use to balance the information needs that we had as Department of Revenue as well as the industry to be able to respond to those. The look back only looked at qualified capital expenditures in relation to credits. Looking forward, we need the CapEx details at a greater level of detail in addition to the OpEx. And that will be effective for the calendar year 2012 reporting that we will get a year from now. So we have already had, we had one workshop in January with the industry where we proposed this new level of CapEx and OpEx categories that are a little bit deeper along with their definitions. And we said after session and after the annual reporting filing period, we will reconvene with our next workshop, which is in April, to resume those conversations. On slide 11, over the next 15 months, we will host these workshops to move this process along as quickly as possible. We're going to update the annual cost supplemental information report because that's the report that will basically summarize those detailed cost categories that we're going to work with the industry on here in the next 2 or 3 months. We are going to, as I said earlier, test the annual production tax return for hopefully for calendar year 2012 reporting, which is they will use that to file their returns a year from now. That's a monumental task as well. That requires process, that requires education, that also requires coordination with the industry, so that they are successful in their filing requirements and that we're successful in capturing the data on those returns through this project. We're going to continue standardizing and eliminating duplicate forms. We're going to compile the information we get here in the next week with the historical five-year look-back information to look at what that looks like and if there's anything new that we see. We're going to basically complete the foundation and basis work for data integration with the tax revenue management system. Because where the data assessment project comes into that larger process is we're basically creating the accounting information, basically like a subledger of information and process that will be used to integrate in the tax revenue management system. For that information, historical, to go into that system, you have to define the business rules. You know, there's a huge amount of work that goes with implementing a system. But you have to have the baseline of information, you have to have your historical, you have to have all of that layer in order before you can do that. So this is a huge amount of work that would need to be done anyway during the revenue management system phase, but we've embarked on that earlier in order to prepare for that implementation and that integration. The tax revenue management system needs to, work more on we need to know their implementation plan. And they need to define that before we know how and the timing at which our information will feed into that. Well, going forward, this project, we've defined what we need to do to organize that data. We know that there's lots of detail work to do, lots of coordination, lots of planning. But we have been working in that direction. We have focused a lot over the last year and currently, and will continue over the next year to work this process expeditiously. We recognize that the administration, as well as the legislature, needs the information for sound decision making. We recognize that, and we acknowledge that. And we're doing what we can to move that forward. Slide 13 kind of lists the benefits of the project, and we've kind of gone through those at a high level. And our next steps are, in fact, to work with industry on those detailed cost categories, to finish standardizing the forms and automating those in preparation for integration into the tax revenue management system. We will need, at the end of our project, to be able to take that detailed information into a form of a database that's on an interim level. And so we're really dependent on the timing of the TRMS and when that will take place, because we recognize a year from now you have an expectation that you are going to have some better information made available to us and to you. On slide 15, we've got a list of what the three handouts are. So if I could take you to the industry information catalog that I mentioned earlier. It's the one that's on the legal size paperwork, and it's got different colors of blue and green. This started out as, I believe, a two-page document last session, and has now grown into something much larger. And this is the compilation of information that DOR, DNR, and AOGCC receive. And as you'll see on page one on the column headers, it does tell you who receives it, what it is, if we can share it, the reason why we request it, when we request it, and the publication and public access to those pieces of information, and then the form in which we get that. So there is quite a bit of information that's on this document. What we also found as a result of doing this exercise and doing the workshops with industry and going into the department's tax accounting system to see the information that we do receive, we were able to pit that up against statute and actually see, are we asking for everything we have the authority to ask for? And what we found is that we are receiving what we're asking for. And we also found that we need to ask for more specific levels of information in regard to lease expenditures. We are getting those. We just can't data capture them because of the form in which we receive those. And this is why we've launched this project, to be able to standardize that in order to collect that. We want industry to make the decisions on where those costs are categorized. You know, we've gotten a lot of feedback that, Department of Revenue, Tax Division, we've already sent you that, or we've sent that to you through joint interest billings. Oh, we've sent that to you through AFEs. Oh, we've sent you that through, and yes, the industry has sent us information, volumes of information. However, we've not had the ability to categorize that because it's not in a standard form. And the Department of Revenue, we don't want to make the judgment on where to put those costs. the industry, this is their business. They know their business very well. And once we describe, once we define what those categories should be, they, we will work with them and they can make that judgment call. The other piece of information that that is not here and it's not part of this catalog, this industry information catalog, is we were able to create a very large matrix of every piece of information that the tax division receives. The statute under which we have the authority to request it and get it, and those areas where we need to request more specific types of information, and that is in the least expenditure category, which is what we've done through the CapEx exercise and the OpEx exercise that we've done and the one we're about to embark on. The second handout is called the Proposed Master Expenditure Category List, and that's got green headers on it. And what that is as we resume our workshops with the industry in April, we will go through these lists, and these are, this is our first round of the next level of detail as far as the type of expenditures for CapEx and OpEx. And then we've gone in and defined what those categories mean. And in April, we will resume the workshop with the industry to work through these in order to determine the level that they can report to us. And then this will be a vetting process as to what do you have available? What are we asking for? Does this make sense? Does this not make sense? Is what we're asking for what we need? We believe that it is. And we will be working with the industry here in about a month. The first page is the next level of CapEx. And then on page 2, 3, and 4 are your OpEx expenditure categories that we've proposed. The third handout is called the SB 192 Amendment 26 PIMS data requirements. It's a comparison to what was listed in the amendment to what what's currently collected by agency. We basically took the amendment and listed it out and kind of broke up the pieces. For example, you may have had in the amendment two things on one line item, and so they're listed individually in the first column. And then the second column will tell you if that information is on our industry catalog. And then the third column is the agency that collects that.
And then of these items here on your this third handout, which items are proprietary and which ones aren't? I think there's some concern, isn't there, that some of these issues in that being requested in the CS on the table may be more complicated than is apparent on the surface?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, that is true, and much of the information that we can collect, we have to be very aware of not making something public that's proprietary or able to be determined as company specific in that. So we'll talk about a little bit more in slide 17. But the vast majority of what's included in SB 192 we're already collecting. And the determination of what could be released publicly or not released publicly would then have to be determined on a case-by-case basis.
What we found in looking at this at a high level is that of the items listed in the amendment, there were four that are not currently collected. But we also believe that those just require more coordination with Department of Labor because they are work program related. And those have the word none as far as the industry catalog center column. They're identified, there's four, and they have none, meaning we don't, they need further research and are not currently collected. And of course, we know that there is much more data that is collected among the three agencies than that identified in the amendment.
Yeah, and Mr. Chairman, and in slide 17, that touches on it, that 90% of the data requirements in SB 192 are already being collected by the Department of Revenue, the Department of Natural Resources, and Alaska Oil and Gas Conservation Commission. Only four of the 35 data items are not currently being collected, and that would require further coordination with the Department of Labor, and we'd certainly be happy to do that to help compile that information. We actually collect more data, our three agencies, than is identified here. And our concern in talking to AOGCC is that reproducing a second time in a state agency information that's already being compiled by the Department of Revenue wouldn't be the most cost-effective way of gathering this information. We've already begun over the last year to be the agency that's compiling all of this, and we would be happy to expand that to the a handful of data items that we're not currently collecting.
Okay. I count five of these nuns in here, but we might want to double check that. One on the first page, two on the second, two on the third, but we can come back to that. Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On page two, why wouldn't the department collect production work programs and their program budgets? Are they not of interest to the department?
And I think also similarly related would be the item on the first page, exploration work program budgets, if they maybe you can kind of roll that into that answer.
Yes, Senator. It's our understanding on the page two on the production work programs and the production work program budgets that the industry does not account, they don't collect that information, they don't report it at that level. And that is why we need to do further research with Department of Labor to see what they do receive, because DOR, DNR, AOGCC, we do not get those pieces of information in that form.
But, Mr. Chairman, the problem is not what they want, but what we want. And why wouldn't we require them to provide production work programs or production work budgets? I don't think that these would be asking too much. It seems as though, as a state, we should require that.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Hoffman, we'll get back to you on that information after talking to the Department of Labor. I mean, the whole reason this all came about approximately a year ago was the realization that we were not collecting all of the information that we, number one, could be collecting, and number two, would be of benefit to the department as well as the legislature and the governor in evaluating issues. So a lot of this is simply identifying what hasn't been previously collected, if it should be collected, if it can be collected, and then determining how to get there. So we'll get back to you with details on that.
Senator Hoffman?
I guess my question is, does the department feel that this information on production work programs and production work program budgets information worthwhile?
Along with exploration on the page one, exploration work program budgets.
Through the chair, Senator Hoffman, yes, this would have value to the state.
Okay. And do we just help me a little bit, because I didn't think of inviting the Department of Labor forward today for the presentation. So are they, has there been dialogue with the Department of Labor on working through these issues, or does the committee need to fire off a letter to the Department of Labor to have them come in and help us with those issues?
Senator, we will work with the Department of Labor. We worked more with DNR, DOR, and AOGCC on the commonality of information. And we will pursue further communications with the Department of Labor. But this did identify the gap.
That's good. I just want to make clear that we how to loop Department of Labor in on as we work through the process. So, Senator Thomas, you have a question?
No, you're fine.
Senator Egan?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It involves the Department of Labor. On page three of the handout we're looking at right now, it's talking about employment information and training. I thought that currently the Department of Labor is getting monthly reports. Why couldn't those go into a system where you would get them as well into a convenient system that you're developing?
Senator Egan, in the time that we had, this identified where we have a gap, and we've spent quite a bit of time among the first three sister agencies, and we do recognize that we need to do more work with the Department of Labor in these areas to see what they do have and what is available. So we recognize that, sir.
And then for statutory cleanup, in that section of the bill, it'd be nice to know what the department is feeling or what they would like to see, not saying we'd do it, but you know, your recommendations to the committee. So just looking at this list, it looks like most of that language in should be reworked or deleted from the bill, and the issues at hand here are categorized as in the none column as far as information availability, and we really need to maybe concentrate on the information delivery to the committee of the data that you're actually that you are collecting, and can you help me with that, Commissioner?
Absolutely, Mr. Chairman. We'd be happy to give you details on the specifics of that, of our recommendations for that.
Okay, that'd be good. I'm not interested in, I don't think the committee is neither, just having redundant information in the statute and or having redundant work done by another agency, and because of the cost and time element here. But it's just the flow of information into the committee here that we're concerned about.
Absolutely, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Commissioner, as I look at this, or Ms. Kippers, as I look at the on page three that we just was indicated by Senator Egan, one of the concerns that's come up recently, in fact, there was an issue that was brought up on the Senate floor the other day about wells that have been abandoned, wells that they can't find anymore, and the difficulty with that, and I realize those are mostly on federal grounds, but why wouldn't we have, and maybe they do on the other three portions of 6A, I noticed that one of them is data is not collected. Are we missing some of the wells that have been drilled out there and lost track of them, or have been abandoned and we don't know about them, or what's the status of that, the middle of 6 there?
Senator Olson, I don't know the answer to that. Merlin Webenmeyer, if you're on the line, can you provide a little more information as far as item 6A on abandonment?
Merlin, if you can identify yourself for the record, who you represent. I see you're on the list here for Lifeline, and if you could help the commissioner with that question, please.
Certainly, Mr. Chair. My name is Merlin Widmeyer. I'm with Ritech Personal Business and under contract with the Department of Revenue to look at data gaps. through the chair to the senator. Item 6A that you're referring to that has none on it is specifically referring to budgets or budget information related to abandonment of wells, leases, and production. And at this point, that is a level of detail that companies don't normally provide to the agencies.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. And while we're talking about information, there's I notice that the capital expenditures are submitted to the department. I think twice a year you reach out to the industry for a estimate on their expected expenditures over the 3 or 4 years into the future, and that's been delivered to the Resources Committee last spring, or actually last summer, in a letter, and then there was interest in the Finance Committee as far as how that information then can flow into the committee deliberations. So I'm wondering what your thoughts are on that. I know there's in the letter that you had sent the committee here, and I don't have it in front of me, referenced that in some of the answers or questions that I put in. And I was wondering what your thoughts are about that subject matter, if we can chat about that for a minute.
Mr. Chairman, the question is whether the company should be submitting more frequent information on their capital?
No, the question is, I think twice a year is ample, mm-hmm. from the industry to the Department of Revenue, but from the Department of Revenue into the legislature. That's what my concern is. I understand some of the concern the industry may have over confidentiality, but the numbers that we get at the committee are a compilation of in the aggregate. So it's virtually impossible to differentiate between firms, and it's also very difficult then to differentiate between legacy fields and other fields without the help of revenue parsing that data. I assume that the data that is delivered changes from, you know, time to time, particularly if it's submitted every 6 months. But we've seemed to have had I think it'd be better for the committee to have a more fluid information flow on that subject matter for several reasons. One of them is the overall policy call, and then keeping a feel for what's going on in our oil basins. And then from a financial perspective, we have a substantial amount of credits that come into the Treasury, 800 plus million a year and climbing. And we have open-ended appropriations to just pay the bills as they're submitted. And I'm just kind of curious about that subject matter.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. If the committee is interested in more frequent updates from the department on issues such as this, we'd be happy to do that.
Let me clarify it a little bit. The concern isn't so much the frequency. I think, you know, annually in January when we start our process works, it's to have a feel for, you know, what is going on. For instance, the references in a previous committee on expenditures were going to decline when, in fact, the submitted documents where they're going to accelerate is of concern. So how do we fix that without statutorily dictating to the department what they'd give us, which I don't think would be the solution I would recommend.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I think I understand the question now. That's something that we've been digging into more over the last year, because we've noticed, certainly the committee is aware that the Department of Revenue historically over decades had been more optimistic in their production forecast than the reality has been. And I think a lot of that has to do with when you're getting information from companies moving out into the future, they're going to tend to be more optimistic rather than less optimistic in terms of looking at how much might be spent on a particular project and what the production on that particular project is. And we're trying to dig down into how we can somehow make that more closer to what will end up being the actuals than we have been historically. Well, it's appearing that we're having the same issue with capital expenditures, where the capital estimates on where how much is going to be spent has been, at least looking over the last couple of years, has turned out in actuals to be less than what the plan is, and we expect that it's probably very similar, and that you've got companies working on certain projects, and they're going to be more optimistic in how much capital they think is going to come to that project, and it may not end up that way. And so that's something we're digging into to get more precise on the comparison between the capital estimates into the future of companies compared to what we see in actuals.
But couldn't that work, Mr. Commissioner, couldn't that work just in the opposite? I know you've referenced the last couple of years, and there's been, I think, some discussion here over the last year plus on, you know, structuring the higher and oil price structure of our oil tax. But couldn't that work just in reverse if, in fact, things ended up where the industry was spending more consecutively than anticipated on a year-by-year basis?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, certainly that could. As an example, one huge predictor of how much development would occur would be, I mean, you know, we've listed, you know, taxes, permitting, and all of the issues that the state has some ability to change, but the price of oil is a prime example. If the world view began to be $150 oil in the out years, then the expectation would be potentially the economics of a project would be improved, and capital spending may go forward on that where it might not have in $100 oil. Or that's just one example, kind of taking it away from the oil tax debate on why potentially capital spending could go up compared to where they see it, because they're making their estimates based on where they think capital is going to go in their company and what they see in their economic model, and those things can change.
Well, I think, not to belabor the point much, but I think it's an issue here that the committee should actually, I guess, visit a little more frequently. Even if you froze oil at $100 a barrel, just hypothetically, or 110 or 90, pick your point in time, I think it would be valuable to the committee as the clock ticked on to keep an eye on those reported potential capital expenditures into the future. And if they're coming in as frequently as every 6 months, and I don't know what months they're due, and maybe you can enlighten us on that a little bit, but I think it is something that the committee wants to look at in more detail than what we've had in the past.
Senator Stedman, the forecast information is obtained by our economic research group twice a year. They get the first one for in October of every year. They work with the companies, and that goes into the revenue sources book that's published the first week of December. And then for the spring forecast, I believe they also get an update that's January, February of every year. But the problem is that you're talking about, you want to understand what the forecast actual is going forward and the change. Because
More than that. There's always an interest as far as the forecast versus reality, but there's also an interest in the change in the forecast.
That is correct.
Because of how it reaches out into the future.
That is correct. The forecast-to-forecast analysis.
Right.
And that's information that we currently get, but we need to get it at the appropriate level. You need some better detail, just like we do, in order for that to make better sense. We recognize that, sir.
Right. Senator Hoffman.
But all of this, you know, more information is better, but our forecasts really accurate? You know, we're collecting, and I'm looking at this information, and we're setting tax policy today, you know, at this table. And it seems as though, a lot of the information isn't still before us. What are the audited results of ACES today? You know, is it working or isn't it working? We don't have those audits even today from 2007, 2008. And it's all good and well to have this presentation, but if we don't have the information, if we don't have the facts, how can we make informed decisions on tax policy for the state of Alaska? And for that matter, how can the department or the administration come forward and say that we need to make changes if we don't even have the audited information? You know, and going back to Senator Olson's concern about abandoned wells, it's not being done. That is not a good answer. It should be being done. That should be the answer. It should be of a priority, and we should be on top of it. And we should be not only, you know, you have not collected by DNR or Department of Revenue or AOGCC, but even if it was collected, it should be shared with the environmental conservation. And we should be on top of that. That is the problem. It seems as though we need to be more aggressive with our, you know, with our state and with our resources, and we should be more demanding to get the information so we can make sound public policy. That's the concern that I have, and I think this is in the right direction, but maybe not far enough.
Through the chair, Senator Hoffman, I agree with you that we need more information, and there's nothing I can do, as you know, about the past. All we can do is work forward, and this is what this is working to do, is to get as much detailed information as we can. In terms of the audits, and to give you a more detailed response to your previous question, by far the most difficult year to work through the detailed audit was 2006. Which we finished, which was the switch from a gross tax to a net tax. We're now working on 2007, which was submitted in 2008, and as Ms. Kepper's pointed out, we're still well within our statutory guidelines, but what's made the work more difficult is we were going through dozens and dozens of regulations being put in place during the time period that this was going on. And any time there would be a regulation that would change the details of a submittal by the company, they would have to go in and put an amended request in. So having two substantial tax changes within a year and a half period of time made things more difficult for the companies, made things more difficult for the department, and it's not a situation where it's just our team of auditors sitting in a room. I mean, we have to work back and forth with the company, so the availability and getting the information back from them factors into the timeline as well. So we're optimistic that we're going to be moving closer to when audits are, to when the information is submitted in a final form and when the audits are done. To kind of paraphrase John Wooden, you know, work quickly but don't rush. And ultimately that's what our folks need to do, is to make sure that they do it as quickly as they can but that they don't miss anything. When the information comes in, when the returns come in from the companies, we do a desk audit. We go through to make sure initially that everything looks to be true. When we finally go into a more detailed audit, digging down, it's to make sure with a higher degree of accuracy that things are done. So we're not seeing any huge errors going into the detailed auditing, you know, oh, you overpaid by $500 million, you underpaid by $500 million. That hasn't been the case. We have a pretty good sense when the return comes in and we do our initial kind of higher level table audit that the numbers are close to being accurate. It's the more detailed audit that kind of cranks it down a little bit. So I think we have a pretty accurate picture of how things are working right now. It's just a matter of getting the more detailed auditing done, which is absolutely necessary and the responsibility of the state, that we're a few years behind on. Not behind statutorily, but
well, the, you know, we could be within the time frames legally, but the problem is, are our credits working or are they not working? Do you know, we've had testimony by, you know, by consultants that saying we may have provided too much credits, but do we have that information, and do we have recommendations from the department to correct that? I don't see that. I don't see the information, and I don't see the recommendations.
Through the chair, Senator Hoffman, it's very difficult in looking at credits, and that's what we've tried to do with a lot of this information, is to shine, not necessarily get a definitive, we gave credit A and we got B, but give a better idea of what's going on. As an example, half of the credits, the tax credits that are paid out, are to companies that are currently exploring. Well, we're not going to know for a decade if those credits end up getting to a point where production is increased by the state of Alaska, or for the state of Alaska. In terms of the other half of the credits, dealing with companies that are currently producing, I think they could probably give you better insight into what those credits did and what happened with their production as a result of that than the department could.
The problem is, we're not talking about millions. We're talking about billions in the past, and we're talking about billions in the future. We need to be on top of this game, because those are our credits, and we should know if they're working or not working, and it should be a very high priority when we're talking about billions of dollars.
Through the chair, Senator Hoffman, I agree with you, and it's the responsibility of the department to get you as much information as we possibly can on this issue. However, we're limited in that we can't see into the future on much of this.
I guess the question is, do you need more assistance? Do you need more personnel? Do you need increase in your budget? How do we get this information? And what is your request? What is the time frame? When can we get it done? And when can we have recommendations of the sort that we can make informed decisions?
Through the chair, Senator Hoffman, I think our budget is fine. As I mentioned, we were very strapped when we were going through the regulations for PPT and then the regulations for ACEs. We feel like what we're presenting to you today is a good example of what we're able to now dig into. I can't speak for why 5 years ago this wasn't being done, other than the real pressure on the department to get a lot of other things done. What I can say is, into the future, we're going to get you as much information as we can.
I think to put a finer point on the concern that has been brought up here is, you know, our consultants have come in and cautioned us on our large credits, 30-40% credits, turning our production tax, basically inverting it, making it go negative, high prices. Yet the administration comes in and asks for increase in credits. So that is a concern that doesn't go unnoticed, and we're going to have a presentation, I think, by your department coming up on dealing with credits at some point here in the next several days, and we'll talk about that. But it doesn't go unnoticed here at the table. Also, the issue back when PPT was put together, the 20% capital credit was targeted for increased production in particularly heavy oil, when it appears that it went into maintenance by the vast majority of it, when we were anticipating roughly, I think, a 13 cents per barrel, which is about 53 million annually, or 50 million annually, 60 million annually, dealing with normal maintenance on an aging field, and it appears that number was probably off by about $2 billion. So it, you know, although we haven't, you know, spent a lot of time on it here at this table yet, it is a huge issue that we're trying to figure out how we're going to deal with it. And quite frankly, I think Senator Hoffman's right. We don't have the information, and I don't personally feel the department has to make very definitive recommendations and back them up, where consultants won't come in and come out with a 180-degree different view. So that's the concern that we have, and we've got just a few weeks left to work through that. So we'll work on credits coming up. So stay tuned, I guess. Where you want to continue on here?
Mr. Chairman, I think slide 17 was our last slide, so if there's any further questions, we're happy to discuss them.
Okay, so you'll, if I can just recap a little bit here, just so I'm clear, that you're going to, the department then will touch base with the Department of Labor and we'll try to rectify these areas that are marked as none, and then the other data is available and you're working on just how to simulate it and then deliver it to the committee and to the legislature?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, with the data moving forward being much more detailed than we can look back in the past, but we are collecting both.
Okay. You want to wrap up your presentation then, and then we'll take a brief 3 minute at ease, and then we'll start the next presentation?
Sure, Mr. Chairman. Having switched from a gross system to a net system is allowing us to collect and have insight into data to a lot higher degree than we had previously. We certainly have more information now than we had before PPT passed or before ACES passed, but more is needed. And as a result, the agencies we've discussed have worked in concert to gather this information. The companies in our workshops understand the importance of it and have also been very forthcoming on it. We haven't had a lot of fighting with what we're requesting. It's been more along the terms of technical issues with each company having different database programs and trying to figure that out as well. But we're pretty optimistic based on how things have started out that we're going to end up having with every year an increasingly larger and more detailed view of what's going on in the oil patch than we have in the past.
Okay. I've got two points questions I wanted to ask. Or bring up, and then I'll let you go. But on the first page of your wider sheets, dealing with the data and, you know, who collects it, so on and so forth. On page number one, there's joint operating agreements. And over here it says on the, it says it's not public information. Can you help me with the, with that concept, because I'm under the impression that one of the our judiciary chairman has some joint operating agreements and cites them in some of his committee questions. So dealing with, I think, in as I recall, dealing with like commitments to expense capital, stating that, you know, there's agreements in there that it takes you know, the three major position holders in those to move forward, or if there's two or what have you, you know, one company might want to do something and or two companies might want to do something, yet the third company could block that. So can you help me with that joint operating agreements, because it's kind of a black box area to a lot of us that we don't quite understand.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. We might have to get back to you, but John Larson, another one of our audit masters who should be online, may possibly have some insight into that.
Mr. Larson, can you introduce yourself for the record and who you represent, and then help us with this information dealing with joint operating agreements, please?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. My name is John Larson. I'm an audit master with the Department of Revenue. And regarding the joint operating agreements, those are a contract between the working interest owners, and like many contracts, those are confidential between themselves. Now, there's several different types of agreements, and I believe that DNR, I don't know if they get the joint operating agreements or not, but there are unit operating agreements that are also received by DNR, but I think it would be better to get the information from DNR about what's the distinction between the unit operating agreement and the joint operating agreement.
Okay. That's fine. Well, maybe what we'll do is we'll just go on and we'll ask DNR to help us clarify the difference between a unit operating agreement and the joint operating agreements, and why it appears some people may even have some of these agreements, that they read and recite them in the, or quote them in particular committees. It seems to be an area where, from time to time over the years, we've had questions at the table, and these operating agreements seem to be just this black box that you can never get an answer out of. And it is of concern when a particular company might make a proposal and there's little to no chance of it going forward without the two partners agreeing, yet that's not recognized.
So, yeah, Mr. Chairman, there could be somebody from DNR in the room that might be able to answer that.
We'll take that up at another time. So with that, I think what we'll do, go ahead, Senator Thomas.
Just one short question or observation here is, and we'll hold you to the statement that the department's budget is fine, but realistically, as you, we certainly don't want to create the redundancy that was indicated by previous testimony, anyhow, or to create more work that's unnecessary. So it seems like we are cranking up the computing and also the formatting things so there's a better transfer of information. And with that, as you evaluate the process that you're going through now, do you feel that in the long run that this streamlining and relooking at the process will actually be a labor-saving process in the long run? Or do you think it will just create more burden?
Through the chair, Senator Thomas, I don't know that it's going to be a labor. Certainly the implementation of our tax management system ultimately will be a labor-saving issue. In terms of the collection of this information, the benefit to our agencies won't be labor-saving as much as it's going to be having far more detailed information for us and for you as policymakers on what's going on.
But with that in mind, and with the computerization or the expanded computerization of things and the straightening out of the redundancy, I would think that would be helpful to the system to alleviate some of the concerns that people are asking us for the same stuff over and over. And as you reformat things and allow the coordination of that information between departments, that would actually save time and save headaches and issues, I suppose.
Yeah, through the chair, Senator Thomas, you're absolutely correct. And in fact, you might remember when Ledge Audit has come in and audited our tax division, they've pointed out that the kind of archaic database programs we've had have resulted in auditors spending a lot of time manually inputting information instead of actually doing the work that they had been hired for. And we are going to see a tremendous benefit of that in terms of getting more caught up on our audits when everything, not just from the point of view of companies all submitting information in the same format, but also the department being able to synthesize, it's going to give us a lot more time to do what we should be doing and not what we're having to do, because that's what needs to be done given what we have to work with.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Hoffman.
Getting caught up on your audits. You mentioned that. Can you give this committee a time frame for that accomplishment?
Through the chair, Senator Hoffman, I can't. Like I've said, we've certainly, now that we've switched from gross to net, we expect them to be faster, but ultimately they're going to take the time that they're going to take. And we've talked to the folks, and they're not going to speed up to the detriment of getting the job done. And like I mentioned before, dealing with the companies has a unknown aspect to the timing as well, and that's not something I can predict.
Well, getting caught up on audits seems like that's where we're going to get. When can you answer that question? Is that because we asked that same question last year in subcommittee. Senator Stedman chaired that committee, and we asked if there was additional revenue that needed to be put to the issue, and at that point you said there was none. And the same question came today, and it's not required. So I guess last year we didn't have an answer. This year, we don't have an answer. When are we going to have an answer? And when do you anticipate that happening, because that is very, very critical when we're talking about revisions to our tax structure. Very, wouldn't you agree that that information is critical when we're discussing tax policy?
Through the chair, Senator Hoffman, I can give you a snapshot at a given period of time on where we are and how fast we're being caught up. But ultimately, and we discussed it quite a bit last legislative session, was we're very much hamstrung by the database system we're having that we're currently implementing. And certainly I thank the Senate Finance Committee for working to get the funds in. That's something that is being implemented. It's going to take a number of years, and so there's a lot of different pieces. I'd love to try to throw an estimate out there, but I can't, not just because it can't realistically be done, but also I don't want to set up an expectation with our folks that there's a deadline they need to get to. They need to make sure what they do is done as accurately as possible.
Well, we'd be negligent if we didn't push the issue. We have a fiduciary responsibility to the citizens of the state of Alaska, and I think that you should feel that same fiduciary responsibility. And for us not to push the issue, we would be negligent in doing so. So I would implore you to find out what the time frame is and give it to this committee, because having no answer to that question is very, very troublesome. It feels as though we are not doing our jobs if we can't get an answer from you as commissioner, because it's in your power to get the job done, and if it needs additional assistance, monetary assistance, give it to us, request it, but we need an answer. We need to get this job done. You said it needs to be done. We say it needs to be done. We need a time frame.
Through the chair, Senator Hoffman, I am in a situation right now that statutorily we're not in a place of being delayed and where we should be. Would I prefer it to be maybe a year closer, 2 years closer? Sure, I would. Are we going to get there? I think that we are, but I can't give you an accurate time frame on that till we know when our database system's in and all of the other variables have an effect on when that occurs. Do I feel comfortable with where we are with the initial audits being done on a year-to-year basis and giving us an accurate view of where we are? Yes, I do.
Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Commissioner, with all due respect, when the governor starts asking for more tax credits for the oil companies out there and we don't have the information that was ported there, I don't feel as comfortable. I don't have the comfort that you feel. And since we are the people that are most answerable to the electorate out there, because we're elected every once in a while, I guess that puts a high priority on our ability to go and make informed decisions, and so we're fully dependent on you and your department, especially for what the administration wants to go and do that is in disagreement with some of us here at the table see as a better avenue.
Through the chair, Senator Olson, certainly more information is better. However, when you look back at the amount of information we knew from the companies when PPT was voted on, when ACES was voted on, we have much more information now than we did then. And you make a decision if you see problems or ways things could be done better with the amount of information you have. So I can say we certainly could have more information and will have more information. I can also say we have more information today than I think the state ever has.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Problem is a lot of it's conflicting. When we look at the report coming, with all due respect, the report that came from your department a day or 2 days after a particular oil bill was dropped in, it raises a lot of questions and concerns, not only on the aggregate level, but the involvement of the department with a particular piece of legislation. When the report is, you know, darn near 180 degrees out from the legislation, or substantial, at least 90, it raises some questions and concerns. Senator Hoffman.
Well, let's turn the chapter back to 2007. The administration was proposing ACES, and I didn't feel that we had the information. And guess what? I voted against that piece of legislation. Now we have another proposal before us. I still don't feel that I have the information. So now the administration is saying that ACES was wrong, this administration, when the last administration, Senate was right. So how can I make a decision? You know, how can this administration make a decision that it's right or wrong if we don't have the information before us? We did, obviously, this administration believes that we didn't have the right information on ACES when it was presented. But it was passed, and this administration is saying that we need to relook and change ACES. I didn't vote for ACES, and I don't feel that I have the information to make the changes that are being suggested today. We need to have the proper information, because we're talking about billions of dollars every single year for the next 50 years. And for you to say we don't have, I'm not going to get the information, I don't know when I'm going to get the information, but we need to make a decision now. I think that's asking a little bit too much.
Through the chair, Senator Hoffman, the detailed audits being moved closer to 2012 is going to have, in my personal opinion, a minimal effect on any of the information that policymakers are going to need or going to have to make decisions like this. We're just basically going through and dotting the I's and crossing the T's. Would we like to get a little closer than 2007, 2008? Of course we would, but ultimately, I don't think that would change our view of what's not working, what's working, and what needs to be changed.
Well, I have a vote here, and I don't think I have the information.
Senator, we'll try to get you all the information we possibly can to help you make the decision easier.
Any other questions for the commissioner? Okay, we're going to have a couple minute at ease because we've been sitting for an hour and a half, and I want the committee to retain and the staff to retain the information. And we'll start the next presentation, and we probably won't finish. We'll pick it up, that presentation, following day will be tomorrow, but we're going to get started on it here, so we're at ease. Okay, let's come back on the record. We're running short of time, which is fine. We're going to run this hearing. We're going to get a few slides done, and we'll pick it up tomorrow and continue on. So if we'll pick it up, excuse me, tomorrow morning. So Mr. Barron, if you could introduce yourself for the record, who you represent, and I'll kind of watch the clock and try to break it in some convenient spot.
Very good. I'm Bill Barron, and I'm the director of the Division of Oil and Gas for the state of Alaska. Now, before we get into the presentation, I'd just like to address the question that came up with DOR about unit agreements, joint unit operating agreements, et cetera. I don't have the information that would probably satisfy the committee with me today, so rather than try and get into that heated discussion because the words are intermixed and they're used in different ways and formats, we'll address that with a letter to the committee so that it's very clear on what we get and the definition of each one of those.
I think that would be helpful. Very helpful, actually.
And we'll get on that right away.
Okay.
We're going to talk about really three things today, and I guess tomorrow. All around land disposition, land management, and then wrap up with facilities capacity and access. Well, in general, let's just discuss for a moment the life of a lease. There's two, and we'll get into some more details, but this is a generalized flow chart that explains the current state process for land disposition and land management. There's two ways for parties to acquire access to state land. One is through an exploration license, and one is through the area-wide lease sale. Once the lease is issued, there's a primary term for exploration. During that time frame, the parties are expected to do their due diligence in exploring the land that they have gained access to prove movable hydrocarbons. If in that stage that there are no movable hydrocarbons discovered or can be documented, they then usually release the acreage, and then it goes right back into the pool for the next lease sale. If there is movable hydrocarbons, a unit is formed, and during the formation of that unit, the state leans in very heavily in terms of work programs, expectations for the first 5 years of that development phase. If after 5 years there is no sustained production, the unit typically terminates. And again, then the land is returned to the state for the lease sale or the exploration license period again. If there is sustained production after 5 years or in that 5-year time frame, a PA or participating area is established. And that's where most of the leases that we will talk about are in at that point, the PA stage. So what does the...
Can we go back to the next slide?
Yes, if we could back up, please. Slide number three.
I can see the time frame under achieved sustained production in 5 years. But why isn't there a time frame of exploration during primary term?
Through the chair, Senator, I'll address that. We've got a slide that talks about the primary term for exploration.
Thank you.
Certainly. So when we talk about the area-wide lease sale, because that is primarily the largest function of land disposition the state has, it is areas or coverage areas that have either limited or no data, and it's in the process of where basins have shown promise or actually do have some production. So in other words, the North Slope foothills, while foothills has had a little bit of prospectivity in terms of gas, that's a primary area of interest. It's a known basin, so it's in the lease sale. The North Slope is obviously an active producing horizon. It's a primary basin. And yet we still have land there that we put up for the lease sale. So in other words, the next piece is the rental rates. We have established in last year during the North Slope lease sale and for the upcoming Cook Inlet lease sale, new lease terms that we believe are going to not only encourage rapid acceleration of exploration, but also of development. And we'll get into some of those details in just a moment as well. During that time frame, and through the chair, Senator Hoffman, to the current primary lease term, as are the current terms are for 10 years. And during that 10-year time frame, the leaseholder has the exclusive right to explore for those resources. And what I mean by the exclusive right, no other company or party can come into that land that they have the rights to do any drilling exploration activities. So it's theirs, and that's the protection that they gain by the lease sale. The system that we've got is basically a product of U.S. oil and gas law. It relies on the highest bidder wins the lease, which makes it a very competitive lease sale. And it's non-discriminatory. In the state statutes, as we affectionately say it, anybody who's 18-year-old and breathing can be a leaseholder in the state of Alaska. It's very unbiased, it's a very fair system, and it encourages large parties, large international companies, local companies, individuals. It's quite an interesting spattering of different styles of companies and individuals participating in the lease sales. The state does have an opportunity and can impose work commitments and special terms on the lease sale. We've done this periodically. We typically do it when we know that there are a higher probability of known hydrocarbons in an area. For example, we put in work commitments for a series of leases in the Cook Inlet around the Cosmopolitan unit, where we knew there was a well had been drilled, we knew it had hydrocarbon, so we captured some available land around that area and put in the work commitments.
Mr. Chairman,
Senator Hoffman,
can you provide the committee with those imposed work commitments for the last 5 years?
Yes, sir. Through the chair, yes, sir. We'd be happy to do that. Typically, the state does not impose work commitments. In as much as the way the current statutes are written is we have to tell the companies what we expect them to do rather than having the companies tell us what they would prefer to do. The current lease terms, primary producing areas, let's just call that Cook Inlet and the North Slope. The primary term is for 10 years. The minimum bid is $25 an acre, and the rental is for the first 7 years, $10 an acre. Beginning in year 8, 9, and 10, the value goes up to $250 an acre.
Mr. Chairman,
Senator Hoffman,
are those set statutorily, and when was the last time those rates were reviewed?
Through the chair, Senator Hoffman, those are not statutorily established. The Division of Oil and Gas has established those, and we in the division look at those on an annual basis. To more fully clarify the question, these terms are, in fact, the first terms that were used in this regard was last year for the North Slope lease sale. In between the years 2002 and 2005, for example, the lease term was for 7 years. Between 2006 and 2009, it varied between 5 years and 7 years, depending upon the area. Between 2009 and 2011, it varied between 7 years and 10 years. So it depended upon several factors. Now, what we've done this year is we took a real hard look at why 5 years versus 7 years, 7 years versus 10 years. And what we recognized was that it's primarily for the North Slope and for the west side of the Cook Inlet. 5 years just didn't seem to be long enough given the short drilling season and short exploration season. 7 years seemed to be about right, but we had several companies that were trying to establish greater land mass areas to get investors in to work with them to bring rigs in, and they were clamoring for a 10-year term. So what we established was a kind of a thought process. We want to give companies the maximum amount of time that's reasonable. We also want to try and encourage the exploration activities in the primary term. And we also want to try and make sure that if they don't do work, that there's an opportunity for them to pay for the pleasure of owning the land and not do anything with it. So we're trying to minimize the warehousing effect. The idea associated with the 1 through 7 being $10 an acre with the jump at $250 after year 8 is the companies at any time can relinquish that land at their discretion. So to go from $10 an acre to $250 an acre in years 8, 9, and 10 gave us in the division the feeling that while we were giving them 7 years at a reasonable rate, jumping up at the higher rate in 8, 9, and 10, let the companies make a business decision. And in the right-hand side of the exhibit, you can kind of see what the impact that is. If, for example, you had 20 tracks, and each one of those tracks was 5,760 acres, or 9 square miles, and that is the largest tract available to be leased by statute. Minimum bid would be $25 an acre. So for a 20-tract set would be just shy of $3 million on the lease sale. The annual rental would be just slightly north of $1 million a year. Now that jumps significantly in years 8, 9, and 10, respectively, up to $28 million a year for that same set of acres if there's no work done. So again, the companies have got an option after year 7 to really, if they're not going to do any work, either do work or pay the elevated rate.
I think we're going to stop on this slide. So
that's very good. That's fine.
It looks like it's going to be a good place to break.
Certainly.
Do we have any? Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Barron, as you look at these lease terms that are there, how do they compare to the lease terms that are on federal lands?
Through the chair, Senator Olson, the federal lands are different. They're much lower. They are very similar to the foothills lease sale, which is much lower.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any other questions for Mr. Behrens before we adjourn this morning's meeting? Okay, we're going to have Mr. Behrens come back 8 a.m. tomorrow or 9 a.m. tomorrow morning. We'll walk through this presentation and continue on with the discussion of the oil tax subject matter. This afternoon at 1 o'clock, there's one bill on the agenda, the Kinnick-Garm Toll Authority. So we are adjourned.